and welcome to a special best of edition of Encore. And on this special edition, Noel McGuinness is joined on Northside today by author and journalist Valerie Cox, where they chat about a book on Alone. Later, George Mulcahy is joined on Lifeline by Father Peter McVerry of the Peter McVerry Trust, and Teresa, a young mum of two, where they discuss homelessness. And finally, Joni Tarrant is joined by Linda Murray of Pieta House, where they chat about the work of the organisation. But first, on this week's edition of Encore, it's Noel McGuinness on Northside Today.
I have author and journalist now, Valerie Cox, on the line. Good morning to you, Valerie. How are you?
Good morning. I'm very well. How are you?
Okay, I was just reading about, not too bad at all, I was just reading about this book a couple of weeks ago, and I said to myself, why did it take so long for someone to write a book about this? And I'm delighted, I was delighted to read that you did. So tell me how it came about.
Well, to be honest with you, I've done a lot of stories over the years on Alone and the work of Alone and the volunteers that have gone out and met their clients and so on. But they actually came to me and they said, look, we want to mark our 40th anniversary and you've done a lot of stories on Alone. Would you be interested? And so I nearly bit their hand off. I was so delighted to do it because I have the highest of regard for the organisation. But the other really interesting thing was that over the years, from the moment go, they always chucked their receipts and all this kind of thing into boxes.
Mm-hmm.
And they kept all those minute books. And back then, 40 years ago, they were all handwritten minutes. But nothing was ever thrown away.
Wow.
So about a year ago or so, they got an archivist in to go through all the materials and to catalogue it properly. So they have this wonderful archive now of Dublin 40 years ago and what was going on and poverty and all the rest of it and what Alone was doing. So I had this marvellous archive to go back to. I wasn't sort of operating in a vacuum, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay, we just go back over, just before we do, I mean, Christmas coming up as well, and we're always putting out appeals, especially around this time for older people and people to say hello, and the whole mantra of Alone as well.
Oh, yeah.
Just alone.ie, if you have any donations you want to make, or even volunteers out there, so just look up alone.ie.
And that'd be great.
As a journalist, can I ask you, Valerie, when you start reflecting and thinking about going back those 40 years and look around today, it's sad, isn't it sad?
It's very sad because, you know, Alone should not still be in existence. And Willie Birmingham never wanted Alone to keep going. Willie Birmingham started Alone as, you know, as showing an example to the government of what they should be doing for older people. But he never felt that it was the job of Alone. And in fact, at one stage, the then Minister for Social Welfare sent Willie a cheque towards his work. Mm-hmm. And he sent the cheque straight back and he said, this is not my work, this is your work, get on with it.
Mm-hmm.
And you do wonder if Willie had survived, because he was a young man when he died, if he had survived, would we still have Alone? Or would he have browbeaten the government into taking their responsibility seriously and looking after our older people?
Yeah, but I have to say, I think he would have been just beating his head off a wall instead, because with a lot of the agencies out there now, they don't seem to be getting much satisfaction from the subsequent governments at
no,
all.
No, but, you know, he did get a lot of things done. I mean, he was like a little terrier. He drove them all bananas. He went to the Dublin Corporation, the council meetings, and, I mean, he just demanded, and when he didn't get, he just went a step higher. I mean, at one stage, he was looking for a task force, and this would be a sort of a flying column that would rush in when something happened and sort out the older person, whether it was poverty, a crisis, a landlord. I mean, on one occasion, there was a landlord taking the tiles off a tenant's roof to get rid of this old lady because they reckoned he'd get more money in the 70s. So anyway, Dublin Corporation said, ah, no, I mean, there's no way you're going to get this. It would cost too much money. So he went to Charlie Haughey, and Charlie Haughey gave him his task force and gave him the money to provide for it. Now, that was a huge thing. The other thing was housing. I mean, he was, at that stage, there were an awful lot of people in Dublin. Now, housing the housing stock we had then was a much, it was a much lower standard. I mean, there were people living in cottages with clay floors. It was that bad. And, I mean, today, yes, we've got all these problems, but the actual standard of the housing stock is better. Willie went out and built two housing estates of his own, and they're still in existence today. Beautiful estates in Kilmainham, small houses, lovely gardens, and a caretaker so that the older people feel secure and looked after to some extent, even though they're living their lives independently. The other major thing, of course, he did was the getting rid of the pauper's grave, because at that stage, people who had no money were buried in a pauper's grave. No religious service and no marking on the grave. The grave actually was situated between existing graves, and they just popped people in. And one day, Willie was up in Glasnevin Cemetery, and he saw this plain wooden box coffin on a wheelbarrow, and he said to the guy, "What's going on here?" And he said, "Oh, this is a pauper, somebody without money, he'll be buried between the graves." And Willie thought this was appalling. So he eventually got the Millennium plot, which had opened for the Millennium in Glasnevin Cemetery, and people are buried there, the beautiful plot, and everybody gets a headstone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that was a huge thing to do for the dignity of older people dying in poverty.
Well, and the great significance of the book itself, Valerie, you just listen to what you've just stated there in the past 1 or 2 minutes, is the amount of work that's been done. I think people sort of have a snippet and a perception that, okay, a loan, oh yeah, I know that, especially as the years have gone by, yeah, that's, you look in on old people and maybe make sure they're all right, but they don't think they see the depth in the work that a loan does that you've just stated there now.
I think, yeah, you're absolutely right there. Because the befriending service is paramount. I mean, this is terribly important. These are people who mightn't see somebody from one end of the week to the other. And volunteers go out there, and they're always looking for volunteers. Volunteers go out and they just sit with the person, have a chat, have a cup of tea for an hour a week. And that makes an enormous difference to their lives. But a loan has gone beyond that as well, because there is still the poverty element, helping out older people, providing housing for older people, which takes an awful lot of doing and an awful lot of money, of course. But in another sense, in a political sense, with a small p, they've gone forward as well, because they have all these experts now attached to them and working for them. And they're able to produce, they're able to research and produce documentation to advise the government. Now, whether the government takes the advice or not, it's your guess as good as mine. But they're providing all this information, you know, scientifically calculated, so that we now know what's going on in Dublin and in Ireland in general, indeed. How, what is the role of older people? How are older people? And what should be done over the coming years as the numbers of our older people shoot skywards?
Yeah, I was just reading your statistics, 30% or more, well, just under 30% of people are over 65. And with people That's living right. longer now, the numbers are climbing, so it's going to become much more of a, well, I wouldn't say a problem, but it's going to be, they're going to need more looking after later on.
Well, it is going to be a problem if we don't put what they need in place to look after them. You know, and the other thing about it is, you know, people are... We treat older people in this country very, very badly. I mean, that is the kernel of it. We don't look after people who have care needs. We don't look after their medical needs, their health concerns. We fire people out of work at 65 years of age because they're too old, which is quite ridiculous, because what we could be doing is, and of course, if anybody wants to retire at 65, that's fine. I certainly didn't. I was forced out. But the thing is, if we kept these people in employment, they'd be paying into the taxes, they'd be paying their taxes, they'd be contributing towards the state instead of having to go out on a pension. And of course, the other way, the thing we've done is older people are not getting their pension at 65 anymore. It's 66 at the moment and climbing. So what are we at? Like, this is not joined up thinking.
Indeed, and it's not about actually about the money either. It's about the socialisation and integration of keeping people in contact with other people all the time.
Absolutely.
And having an interest.
Absolutely.
And everything that you mentioned about what depression, saving depression and dementia and all like that, it all combines to bring them all together. And then the book on the loan, that's available now, I suppose, in all shops.
It's, I'll tell you where it is. It's in Eason's and it's in Veritas. And it's online. And, you know, if you're somewhere around Alone, you can pop in and get it. Alone is in Pleasant Street in Dublin 8. So there's you know, certainly all the Eastern stores and Veritas, you will pick it up there very easily.
Okay, listen, thank you very much for talking to us. It's been a great pleasure
talking to you, Valerie.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Thank you.
Bye bye. And that's author and journalist Valerie Cox, and that book Alone. As you said, you can get it, it's available in Alone. But just to mention again, a wonderful, wonderful charity, and coming up to Christmas is always quite important to check in on all the people. If you want any more information, you can give them a call at 679-1032, or you can look up alone.ie. So the phone number again is 679-1032. If you want to make any donations, or indeed if you want to volunteer as well.
And that was Noel McGuinness, who was joined on Northside Today by author and journalist Valerie Cox. Next on this special edition of Encore, George Mulcahy is joined on Lifeline by Father Peter McVerry of the Peter McVerry Trust and Teresa, a young mum of two, where they chat about homelessness. I'm delighted to say that I'm joined now live in the studio by Father Peter McVerry from the Father Peter McVerry Trust. Bridget, have you in? Father Peter, Teresa Dorman, who is a mum with two children.
Twin boys, yeah.
Twin boys, three and a half. Aisling Hedeman from the North Dublin Bay Housing Crisis Community. And also to my colleague, Colin Fogarty. Can I just start with you, Father Peter, and the Father Peter McVerry Trust. Can you tell us, first of all, where you're based and perhaps a little bit about the history of the Trust?
Well, the Trust started back in the 1970s when I was working in the inner city, and I came across a 9-year-old kid sleeping on the street. So we had a number of, we were working with young people in the inner city. We had a number of services. We had a youth club. We had a craft centre where they could make lovely crafts and sell them and make a few bob legally for themselves. And we had employment schemes going. And then this 9-year-old kid sleeping on the street. So we said, let's get a house and let's open a little hostel for a few kids like him. So we did that. And then the problem just began to snowball. The numbers grew and grew. The kids got older and we had to get hostels for different age groups. And then the drug problem hit Dublin and we had to get a detox centre. Then we had to get drug-free hostel accommodation for those who had finished the detox. So one thing just led to another. So today we have 15 hostels all over Dublin and one in Newbridge. We have about 200 apartments where we can give a homeless person the key of the door and say, this is yours for the rest of your life. You never have to become homeless again. We have two drug treatment centres and we have a drop-in centre and we have a youth cafe. And that all came, in a way, by accident. It wasn't planned. It just developed organically from opening a hostel for a 9-year-old kid who was sleeping on the street.
I'm also delighted to say that both Colin and myself are joined by a mum of two children, two boys,
yeah.
Both aged three and a half, the twins, obviously. Teresa, just talking to you before we began this conversation, can you tell people how many times you've been moved?
Well, basically, I only came homeless in the last 5 months.
Okay.
I've been moved 25 times. Could have been more than that.
Yeah.
That's so far.
25?
Yeah. Basically from hotel to B&Bs, the hostels, some nights on the street, staying in police stations. And it's just disgraceful. They moved me Halloween day. Couldn't go trick-treating with my kids because I was moving. My kids were disappointed, heartbreaking.
Just to mention that the main topic this morning is children in emergency accommodation. And 25 movements in 5 months. If there is a typical day in your life, Teresa, I can't imagine there is, but if there is, what is that typical day like?
Just move and get my kids to school, going to my little cleaning job, collecting the kids from school. If I can't get to work, do a 2-hour cleaning job, drop my kids to school, go straight to work, collect my kids straight from work. Go back to the hostel, bring them out for something to eat. Some places you can't cook, you have to go out day, buy food, cost us a fortune. Travel allowance, moving us from Dunleary, Sutton. It's just madness.
And can I ask about the effect on your children?
Because this is
arguably the most important part of their lives as far as psychological development is concerned. This is where they get to meet other kids.
Yeah.
They need space to play. Mm-hmm. They need things, toys to call their own.
Well, basically, they have none of that. They've nothing. Basically, they want you to stay in this one room, the three of us, cramped in the room. You're not allowed to go into other people's room. There's no sit room. Basically, if I collect them from school, I try to bring them to playgrounds to give them a bit of freedom. But their heads is that messed up that it's just unbelievable. When I was in my rent accommodation, I had them down every night at 8:30. Now I'd be lucky to get them down at 12 o'clock at night because we've been moved that many times. Their routine has just gone out the window.
Can I talk about your present situation? What is your present situation?
Well,
or do you have one?
I haven't really. I don't really know where I stand now. I don't know where I am. I'm in townhouse on Lower Gardner Street. I don't know if it's permanent or what. Been trying to get me in touch with my key worker the last week and I haven't heard nothing back. I go to Parkgate Street every day, Monday to Friday. They're telling me to stop going down there because there's nothing they can do. And I just keep telling them, you're going to see me every day till you start walking around the situation.
And Father Peter, is this story typical of Dublin in 2017?
Well, it's typical for about 1,000, 200 or 300 families who are currently homeless. If you include the number of families who were homeless and have now moved out of homelessness, we're probably talking about 3,000 or 4,000 families who have become homeless and have spent some time in hotels and B&Bs over the last few years. So it's something that is affecting a large number of families, and it is causing terrible problems. If you have a two-parent family, you're all living in one hotel bedroom, the tensions between the parents can grow to a point where the parents simply decide to separate. It's extremely stressful on the children. Children need security, they need routine, they need stability in their lives, and they don't have that. They're becoming stressed out because not just because of their situation, but because they see our parents stressed out. Yeah. One child reported hearing his mother going into the bathroom at night time when she thought he was asleep in order to have a cry, so that he wouldn't hear her. It's extremely stressful on parents and on children. The children are being damaged. They're being damaged psychologically. They're being damaged emotionally. And they're being damaged educationally because you can't go to school and study if you're stressed out.
No.
And so these children could miss 18 months or 2 years really of school, and they may never ever catch up again with that. So this is causing enormous damage to families and to children, and some of that damage may be irreversible.
Would it be fair enough then, Father Peter, to call the current situation that we have a crisis?
I think it's gone beyond crisis.
Okay.
I think it's out of control. The Dublin City Council don't know what to do. They have often three families per day presenting as newly homeless. They have no accommodation for them. They tell them to go and find an hotel themselves. I mean, that is the pits asking a family who have just become homeless, who turn up in the homeless service with all their belongings and their kids in tow, and ask them, you go and find an hotel bedroom that will give you a place for tonight, and we'll pay for it. And sometimes they only get a place for one night, and then the following day they have to do the same thing all over again. We did help one family to find an hotel bedroom, but it took us 100 phone calls to get that hotel bedroom for this family. Imagine asking a family with their kids and all their belongings to have to do that themselves. It's out of control. There is no, they're simply managing, as you say, a crisis. Families are moved from hotel to hotel at very little notice. As you say, you could be moved from Dunleary to Sutton at short notice. You have all your bags, your children, your buggies. They don't give you a van to transport you have to get taxis to transport all your belongings from Dunleary to Sutton. What's that going to cost you? That's going to cost you more money than you have.
So
children don't have any play, children, friends to play with because they're constantly on the move. It is absolutely outrageous. We are the 14th wealthiest country in the world, the highest economic growth in the EU. And we have this situation where families are sometimes unable to find an hotel bedroom even and are told to go with their children to a police station for the night.
And that was George Mulcahy, who was joined on Lifeline by Father Peter McVerry of the Peter McVerry Trust and Teresa, a young mum of two, discussing homelessness. And finally, on this week's edition of Encore, Donie Tarrant is joined by Linda Murray of Pieta House, where they chat about the work of the organisation.
I'm delighted to welcome to the programme this afternoon Linda Murray from Pieta House in Ballymun, our old friend Linda. Well, she's not that old really, but a real good friend of ours here at Mirror FM. Linda, good afternoon and welcome.
Thanks, Tony. Thanks for adding that bit in that I'm not that old.
Although, Linda, that at times you must feel old with the amount of work you have to do, because I did hear from various people involved with Pieta House that your workload is increasing and increasing and increasing.
Yeah, it certainly is, yeah. And especially this time of year, you know, even though we still have clients coming in the summer, the winter time is quite a difficult time for people. So, yeah, we're getting busier and busier every year. You know, which is great. We have the service here, but it's not good on the other side of it, because nothing much is changing. You know,
Linda, it's a funny thing now that you mentioned that. Well, there's nothing funny about it, but I happened to be listening to a debate or an interview radio piece last week, and I was listening to something which I think I had heard mentioned in passing before, but it was discussed in much greater detail on the programme I was listening to, and that is the phenomenon of SAD, or SADS.
Yeah, that's right, yeah, the seasonal affective disorder. And even for most people, the winter time can be hard anyway, because it is dark in the morning, it's dark in the evening. Some people love it, they cosy up by the fire, they're with their families. Some people don't have that. So they're finding that in the winter time, because of the clocks, that it causes a bit of depression. So it's kind of seasonal, you know.
Yeah, I did hear now, Linda.
A lot of research now.
Yeah, and I did hear as part of it that the further you are away from the equator, heading either towards the North Pole or the South Pole, the further away you are from the equator, the more likely you are to suffer from this.
Yeah, and you see, our hormone levels change in the daytime and they do at night. So you'll find a lot of people that are depressed, the nighttime is quite difficult for them anyway. You know, it's quiet, it's lonely, you're overthinking everything, overanalyzing things. So now when your clocks change and you're waking up and it's dark, you're nearly coming home from work or whatever, and it's dark in the evenings, there's not much sunlight. We don't get much in the summer either, so the vitamin D levels are quite low too, you know. But it's great that it's known now, because there is a lot of things that people can do, you know, and there is a special light you can buy that you can put it on in your house. You can get the light bulbs, and you can get an actual light where you can just put it on in the room, so it gives it the effect of daylight.
Tell me more about that light, Linda. Is it freely available? Is it in specialised?
Yeah, you can probably get it online. Some of the pharmacies would sell it as well. But a lot of people use that in a lot of the European countries now. They use it in their offices because of the effect of the daylight on work. You know, the actual work that people do, they're affected by it in the winter, so things change. So they actually have them as, like, our fluorescent lights, say, but they have the special SAD lights there. So it creates the atmosphere of being bright daylight.
That is absolutely amazing. I've never heard of that before. And not wishing to sound stupid, but I suppose, seeing as I'm on this end of the microphone, I may as well, not for the first time, says you. Do you take them out then in the summer and keep them in storage, or can you use them all year round?
You see, you can buy small ones, Tony, or you can buy large ones, or you can do... You can keep them all the time, because even at night time, but mainly for the winter, because of the amount of darker hours that we have, people can just put them on. And it doesn't take that long. You can leave them on... I can't remember what the recommended time is, but you don't have to leave them on all the time if you don't want to. It just gives you that extra bit of, technically, daylight that you don't have in the winter. You know, so you wouldn't have to keep them on all the time. But even in your room, as you're getting up in the morning and dressing or something, or you're sitting down, work, you're doing a bit of work or something, it's there. It just gives you that extra bit of brightness.
Well, that is amazing. That is amazing, and I really hope that if there's somebody listening to us today who suffers from that terrible affliction,
and they may not realise, Donny,
they may not realise that they're available and freely available.
Yeah, because come the winter time, I don't like it, and people have this blockage about the winter. Some people love it, and they love that cosiness and closing the curtains and whatever, but some people hate it, you know, and it's just a season. You know,
that is,
and because of the dark hours, I think that's why they put Christmas into the time it is, for, so people to have something to look forward to in the middle of the dark months and the dark hours. You know,
but yeah,
that's
another
trigger for people.
Yeah,
you know,
I think so as well. And I think a lot of people know that. I mean, I don't want to be annoying or upsetting any of our very religious people listening today, but I mean, if you trace it back far enough, I think you're 100% right in what you said there, Linda, because I have heard an argument that says that Christmas is actually a pagan festival going back through the centuries, put in place because it was smack bang in the middle of the depressing dark days.
Yes, exactly. And we kind of know that, you know, because it is a difficult time of year. Yes, and then on the other hand, sometimes people don't like the summer, but it is brighter, there's more people about, you know, there's human contact, whereas in the winter, people are going in, they're closing their doors, you don't see anybody. So that isolation part and that feeling of loneliness is there, probably more so in the winter, you know. Yeah, it's amazing, but I don't know whether people know that, but they can get the lamps, and it's worth a try.
Now,
SAD,
yes.
Lights, lamps, you know, it's worth a try online or any of the shops, but they really work.
On a couple of occasions, Linda, we have mentioned, I suppose, the real reason for our little chat today, that even though it is 5 or 6 weeks out, Christmas is on its way. I have absolutely no doubt that there will be a lot of people who dread the coming of Christmas because they will be on their own. A lot of people dread it for various other reasons, but
homeless, anything. Yes. I mean, obviously, you know that what's happening here, the amount of people homeless or living in hotels. So there is stress factors, money, not having family. And on the other hand, you've got the other where people, families get together. You know, so you've got it's like polar opposites nearly, isn't it? You know, and it is a difficult time for people.
Is it
a very happy time?
Is it a particularly busy time for Pieta House, Linda? Which is why I really want to talk to you today, because I want to talk about Pieta House in relation to Christmas and the run up to Christmas, and as well as that, like, we all know the fantastic work you do, and if anybody wants to contribute, so we'll get to that at a later stage. But just talk to me, Linda, about, we'll say, 2 weeks before and the 2 weeks after Christmas, what it's like around Pieta House.
Yeah, we're very busy. Usually kind of from October right up to Christmas and the New Year. Now, all our centres stay open. They will be closed at Christmas time, but our Lucan Centre will be open. I'll give you the number of that. That's 01601000, so people can call that line. And we also have our helpline number, and they will stay open 24/7.
I was actually talking to, a couple of weeks ago, I was talking to your colleague Maria Pilo from the Lucan office.
Yeah.
And it was something that I asked them, like, did you ever in your wildest dreams, back in, I think it was 2006 when John Freeman founded Pieta House, did you ever in your wildest dreams think that it would turn into the entity that it has become?
No, it's just, I know Joan's vision was to, at the time, to have a Pieta in every county so that everyone had access to it. But I just think that over the past few years, it's just spread, you know. Even the Darts into Light, we started off in the park. Now there's venues everywhere in Ireland and, you know, everywhere, Australia, America, everywhere. So it's just amazing. I don't think anyone would have seen how big it's grown so quickly, you know. It's amazing.
And I suppose, Linda, as well, one very obvious thing, anybody who wants to come knocking on your door, you're only just up the road there in Santry. Where would they find you?
Just lift the phone. Now, it's not a walk-in service and none of the masks. If they just lift the phone, we'll make an appointment for them to have an assessment. After the assessment, then, if Pieta is the best place for them to be, then they've gone to our waiting list if we have a list, or else they'll get an appointment straight away. It's just as simple as that, just lifting the phone.
Linda Murray from Pieta House, it's as always has been a pleasure. Thank you for your time, and on behalf of people who have benefited from the services provided by Pieta House, thank you and your colleagues so much. Linda, if I don't talk to you before a happy Christmas, is it too early to wish you one?
Yeah, no, it's never too early. Thanks very much, Tony, and thanks for having us on. And thank you to everybody out there who does donate, who does fundraise for us. We really appreciate it. And you know, keep up the good work. It's brilliant. It is about hope, and it gives us great hope. You know, people are very generous. They'll do anything to help, and it's just amazing to see that, you know.
Linda,
so thank you to everybody out there.
Linda, as always, it has been a pleasure. Thank you so much, and we will talk soon. Bye-bye.
We will, Donny. Thanks so much. Bye.
That's it from what was a special edition of Encore. Encore will be back here on Near FM at the same time next Sunday afternoon. That's 4 p.m. Have a very happy new year. Bye-bye.